Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. Biometrics stolen via the express lane. We got that story, plus get tracked or lose your pension. But first, journalist interrogated and fired for a story that links the CIA and Syria weapons flights. This from Zero Hedge, who writes that a months-long investigation, which tracked and exposed a massive covert weapons shipping network to terror groups under the watchful eye of the CIA and other intelligence agencies, has resulted in the interrogation and firing of the Bulgarian journalist who first broke the story. Investigative reporter Diljana Gaitanzeva authored a bombshell report for Trud newspaper based in Sofia, Bulgaria, which found that an Azerbaijan state airline company was regularly transporting tons of weapons to the Saudis, UAE, and Turkey under diplomatic cover as part of a CIA covert program to supply anti-Assad fighters in Syria. Those weapons, Gaitanzeva found, ended up in the hands of CIA, ISIS, and al-Qaeda terrorists in Iraq and Syria. But maybe even more explosive, finds that private American companies contracting with the U.S. government to help train and equip militants in Syria. An investigative report by BuzzFeed, first of which was published back in 2015, named a military contractor named Purple Shovel LLC as the recipient of two no-bid contracts worth more than $50 million as part of the U.S. operation to train and equip programs for Syria. Gaitanzeva's report definitively links now Purple Shovel and other private American contractors to the Azerbaijan Silkway Airlines shipments. Even though Gaitanzeva's reports is actually months old and no one really paid all that much attention to it until this past Sunday, where Al Jazeera featured the story while giving the shocking update that Gaitanzeva had been interrogated by Bulgarian authorities and then fired from her newspaper for the pleasure. James, this is the new normal.
It is indeed. And I know that all of the individual parts of this story are going to sound like, well, yeah, we already knew that to a lot of people who are watching this program. But I still think this is an important story to really delve into because it touches on some really fundamental touchstone sort of issues. And if you hear Azerbaijan involved in this supplying weapons to terrorists and alarm bells start ringing, then congratulations, you've been paying attention, because that should smell a little bit like Gladio B. So, of course, if you go over to newsbud.com, you'll see that they have a thorough 38-minute video/audio report up on this that involves an actual interview with the journalist talking about her experience, her ordeal, getting interrogated over this story, and a commentary from Sibel Edmonds about how this relates to Gladio B. So this is a bigger story than perhaps it sounds like at first glance. It's not just about, oh yeah, they're shipping weapons to terrorists in Syria. We already knew that. No, there's some interesting details in here that relate to the bigger picture that people have to think about. And then, of course, the whole other side of this is that, yes, when journalists actually do their work and really do sink their teeth into something really juicy, not only do they get fired, they also get interrogated over it. So this, again, there's a lot of worrying things about this story that I hope people will delve into.
Kind of makes me think of Gary Webb in some ways, although he didn't get interrogated. He was just basically shipped out to the nowhere bureau that no one would really care about. Now, again, fortunately, everything we say and mention in these episodes will always be sourced and cited down in the show notes. You can get those links and continue that research for yourself. So, James, I suppose if that first story sounded familiar, oh, yeah, shocker, the CIA runs weapons. I suppose our second story might sound like, oh, shocker, the CIA's stealing a bunch of biometric information. Well, they are. CIA's secret spy tool steals biometric data from other intelligence agencies. This via activist post, who notes that WikiLeaks has published a document of a CIA project called Express Lane, and it's all one word. It allows the CIA to secretly extract biometric data. That is, when you break that word down, that's the numbers of your life, your biological data, and of course that's part of the track and trace system. It allows the CIA to secretly extract biometric data from their friends at the NSA, Homeland Security, FBI, and even non-U.S. agencies. The documents from Express Lane were released in the International Whistleblowing Organization as part of its ongoing Vault 7 series on the CIA's hacking capabilities. The program is operated, again, all allegedly, with a branch within the CIA called the Office of Technical Services, OTS, and they provide biometric collection systems to partner intelligence services around the world, quote, with the expectation for sharing of the biometric takes collected on the system, end quote, according to a file released by WikiLeaks. The user guide for the tool states that the program was developed to support OTS in its efforts to verify that biometric data was being given to the CIA. Express Lane, version 3.3.1, provides an ability to disable the biometric software if Liaison doesn't provide the agency with continued access. Express Lane is installed and run under the guise of upgrading the biometric software by OTS agents who physically visit the target site. Now, James, I talked about this on the morning show a couple mornings ago. CIA built fake software update system to spy on Intel partners, and it reminds me of the stories we've talked about, whether it's, you know, the Geek Squad. Oh, hey, my computer's broken, and spies come in and rat you out to the FBI for whatever things you may or may not be doing. And it, of course, should cast our minds back, in a way, to Danny Casolaro and the Octopus. A lot of these stories, James, that's I think, what, for me, is the important part of kind of doing this work. It's making the contextual connections that make it all make sense in a historical context, not something that happened today where, oh, yeah, those guys are bad, but tomorrow we don't even think about it. So this does seem to, again, kind of connect to the Octopus.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's where my mind went with this story, the Promise software that they, we'll give them to all our intelligence partners. And of course, there's the back door that gives them all of the secret access to that information, of course. So when the CIA comes bearing gifts, you better believe that those gifts are have back doors embedded in them, this being no different. And I think this story is kind of funny in the sense that at the lower levels of understanding of government, people might think, oh, you know, if the government takes biometric samples or whatever for, you know, this or that agency in this and that context, then the government generally has it. And then people who are wiser will be like, no, there are firewalls, and, you know, this agency has access to it, but this one doesn't. And there's, you know, we put this in place so that the information is carefully guarded. But in reality, no, the government does have access to it generally, and the CIA has access to anything that's involved in that's collected anywhere by anyone. And we should be aware of this. I think this is a good story to introduce normies to the concept that, yeah, whatever you give to the government in whatever context, whether it's for your driver's license or anything else, it's not just some innocent little thing that's only, oh, they only need it for that one agency. No, of course, the CIA and everyone else is going to have access to it. And maybe it doesn't matter to you personally because you don't care, you're not some big spy or whatever. But hey, if a journalist, like, in Bulgaria, gets interrogated because of this or that, I mean, think of the ways that information on absolutely anyone and everyone is being collected by these agencies behind the scenes. It's an important story because of, again, the implications of all of this that I hope people will think through and hopefully introduce this story to people who are more trusting of the government and when it comes knocking on your door asking for personal information.
Which will set us up for our third and final story this week. On New World Next Week, episode 319, it's the last day of August in 2017. And actually, James, again, sort of speaking of the context of all of this, I can't help but think of the current state of what's going on at YouTube when we think about the first story. It's kind of, in some ways, I suppose, the elephant in the room of a lot of what we're talking about here. Which, come as no surprise, they're turning off all kinds of accounts and things. And I think, even though these might seem like disparate stories, they're all pretty well connected. So I know, James, I'm kind of springing that on you out of the blue, but have you had any problems of that yet? Because I've seen nothing but screen grabs from people saying, you know, oh, YouTube turned down my video for this, and I got blocked for that.
I don't even remember. I think I got an email recently about something like that, but it doesn't affect me because none of my videos are monetized, so it doesn't matter if they demonetize them. So I actually do not remember if I received such an email from Google, but at any rate, it doesn't matter to me personally in that sense. But I thought it was interesting. I think it was Julian Assange recently tweeted out about Ron Paul's videos all being demonetized, and he called it economic censorship, which I thought was it's a good way of looking at at that issue and what it is. Because, of course, it's not censorship. They're not preventing Ron Paul from speaking, and they're just not allowing him to monetize. What's wrong with that? Well, economic censorship is one way to look at that phenomenon, and it's clearly affecting and going to affect creators, which is why, as we should say, as we always do, that's why there is an exodus from YouTube going on right now, because there are alternatives, including BitChute, which I'm sure our listeners will be aware of, and others that are popping up, DTube and VidMe, and a bunch of others. I'll throw in a link, a related link in the show notes, to a tweet by Jeremiah Harding, who listed a bunch of different alternatives to YouTube that are starting to gain traction now that people realize, oh, congregating in one place with a CIA-infested company might not be the best way to spread our information around.
Well, it's all about the economics, or what, as the saying goes, the answer to 99 out of 100 questions is money, and such is the case in a way with our third and final story, but it still connects to this sort of beast system that we're talking about, and it comes via the Irish Times. Woman's pension cut after refusal to get public services card. A woman in her 70s has not been paid her state pension for a year and a half because she refused to register for a public services card. As a result, she's owed some 13,000 euros. The woman, who did not wish to be named, told the Irish Times she felt bullied, that's her word, following several letters from the Department of Social Protection inviting her to register. Many public bodies have increasingly been using this card to validate people's identities for the purpose of delivering services. About 2.75 million people, or million cards rather, have been issued to people, but ministers have insisted that the card isn't compulsory. However, civil rights groups have described it as a national identity card by the back door. The woman told officials that she would get the card if they could show her that it was indeed mandatory, but nothing had been produced to show her that this was the case. And then in the article, as is the case sometimes with these stories, there are a lot more finer details, and there's a bunch of bureaucratic back and forth. The Kafka-esque world of the state that we've talked about here so many times with the doublespeak and the non-answers and please, if it pleases the crown. But basically, at the end of all these back and forth, she asked again, so is the card now mandatory? And the Department of Social Protection said welfare legislation required a person to, quote, satisfy the minister as to their identity and allows for the disqualification from receipt of a benefit in the event that it is not done, end quote. So that's a not answer, but in a way, it's the tacit answer. And unfortunately, that's a lot of what we're looking at. So whether we're talking about, oh, they're kicking you off of YouTube, it's only a couple more steps away before they turn off your digital payment system. James?
Yes, this is an important story, again, not just for the people of Ireland, although obviously the people of Ireland, but I think what it portends for the rest of the world as well, that's happening in various stages, in various ways, in various countries. If people are interested in following this story in Ireland specifically, use the hashtag PSC on Twitter, and there's all sorts of information about this story. It's really starting to pick up quite a bit of steam in Ireland as it breaks into the national news and becomes a big scandal there, as it should, because of course this is, I mean, let's use the word Orwellian. I mean, it is incredibly invasive, this idea that in order to access any sort of government service, you're going to need to take their card. And of course, generally, the people watching New World Next Week will understand the broader implications of that. And as I say, it is happening all around the world. I can attest to here in Japan, where they just recently rolled out the My Number card, which is your one number that's going to be for all your government services. Instead of having, you know, social security over here and health over here and whatever, now it's this one number, because they had a big problem a few years ago losing a bunch of people's pensions or whatever. And, well, that'll never happen again, because it'll all be in one nice big database. And, oh, by the way, your My Number card will be set up so you can use it as a library card. You can use it as a credit card at some point in the future. They're going to start rolling it out that way. So it will be your everything card that the government will have access to everything that you're doing. And I think people in Japan and people generally understand that that is a very, 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 very terribly bad idea, and you should not be giving government access to everything that you do in your life willy-nilly like that. But this is the generational sort of indoctrination that goes on. And this My Number card sounds ridiculous to people who have been living decades and decades and decades of their life without this. But for people growing up, who grow up into this system, and they turn 18 or whatever, and they get their card, and for them it will be natural. This is the way it is. And that's the really insidious part of this, the indoctrination that goes on, so that the generation coming up thinks it's just normal. And that's why I think we need voices like ours and others in the alternative media to point out, this is not normal, do not normalize this, do not accept it, do kick up a fuss, because this truly is the beginning of something extremely dangerous, to give government carte blanche access to everything that you do in your life.
One, I think it's pretty telling, too, as you're sort of talking about this, you know, the younger generation, because who's the subject of this last story? A 70-year-old woman in a country that, if I'm not mistaken, was one of the biggest to fight the European Union, put up the most amount of fuss. So I suppose in some ways we shouldn't be surprised that it's coming from old, angry people in Ireland. Again, all those stories will be included in the show notes. I wanted to include just a couple of quick updates for stories that we have covered recently here on New World Next Week. Again, it's all kind of part of that context. Analysis of bite marks and shoe prints, once seen as solid evidence, now not so reliable. So reports now the Associated Press, which you might recall us talking about several months ago. And the other one, James, this is, of course, can't make this stuff up. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Bernanke to speak at blockchain conference. That tweet shared by our good buddy Richard Grove at Tragedy and Hope. And again, I want to thank people for...
Can I just add, before anyone, because that headline is going to get a million people thinking a million things. Can I just add one little thing to that? Blockchain is not Bitcoin. Bitcoin is not blockchain. I know people have been trained to think they are the same thing, but they are not. So that's an important thing, and that headline is going to mislead a lot of people.
And I've been talking about blockchain a bit as it relates to food and technology on the morning show, as it relates to, Hershey's and Walmart and IBM. So we'll leave those notes in the show notes. And again, I was going to say thanks for letting us have a little bit of time off out there. And again, remind people that we are independent, non-commercial alternative media. We've each been around for a decade apiece. And you can support our work at our respective support pages and our Patreon accounts. And that's what keeps us going and growing. James?
Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to getting back on the horse here. So thank you for this. And we'll do it again next week.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Take care.